Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. As many of you will already know, this week I have Sheldon Neidel as my guest, and he is regularly channeling, on a weekly basis, messages on behalf of the spiritual hierarchy and the Galactic Federation. So I'm sure we're in for a very interesting interview. So I know Sheldon is with me now, so can I welcome you onto the show, Miss Sheldon?
Hello, Mike. Here I am.
Hello there.
Hi. How are you?
I can't
hear
you too well, but your voice is very clear, so hopefully we will manage a conversation between us.
Okay.
Is everything fine with you anyway?
So far, so good.
That's good. What I'd like to ask you to start off with is one question that I think is possibly the one thrown at you every time you meet new people, and I'm certainly interested to know, but when did you first ever have contact with ETs?
Well, from the beginning, when I was a little itty-bitty kid, that's when I first started with this. So, as a matter of fact, my sister likes to say, because we were both in this whole thing when I was a kid and she was a kid, we both believe, and she believes the most, that that we are, our real parents are really up in the ships, and because we spent a lot of our time up there. So.
Yeah.
So I would say my time for actually beginning with ETs probably would have been when I was very, very young, under one, to all the way up to when I was about 15, and then again, in 86, it started up again, so I had a period from about, let's see, that would be about the mid-40s to about the early 60s, and then again about 25 years later, so.
Right. Were those early contacts in any way given to you that you actually realized where it would lead to?
When I was about 8 or 9, Washington was my guide up there, was totally, when I was in the ships, telling me that one day I would be doing what I'm doing, and I would think of myself, my earth side, as a person who was stuttering and very shy, and say, that's something I don't believe. So I did not believe it till it suddenly happened to me in the late 80s, and I started the whole process of preparing for this with a lot of education for between 86 and 92, and then in 92, I gave my first lecture up in Seattle, and I've been doing this ever since, so.
Right. So, when you were taken up in the ships, has that subsequently been a regular thing? I mean, do you come up into them often?
Well, right now I do it more, you might say it's spiritually, because they don't really have to bring me up there because I'm connected.
No, no.
So I have the equivalent of like a 3D television and a radio in my head all the time, so I'm kind of in contact. So
the first time you went up, then presumably was in your physical body, but in later times you simply transfer them out of the body.
Right, and also they also can show me what they're doing up there all the time. So I feel like I'm up there kind of indirectly all the time. So.
Oh yeah, yes. How do you control that in the sense that if it's constantly with you, does it not interfere with your, say, other thoughts or normal thinking?
Well, I'm so used to talking to them that sometimes I'll get carried away with people, and the first thing I noticed was that people have to get used to that. That's something that my partner, Colleen, has learned to get more used to.
That must be rather strange for people who aren't aware of your background. It must be a surprise to some of them.
Yeah, sometimes people wonder why I'm not paying attention, or if I'm someplace and they're saying something, I won't ignore them anymore and I'll start talking to them. So
yeah.
I kind of get into my own little world. If no people are ignoring me in a section, I just go away.
Right. So bearing that in mind, when you take your weekly message, do you, for that, sit at a prearranged time? I mean, is there a regularity in your taking those details down?
Right, it is, because basically it's like taking dictation with being able to converse with the people. I have a committee of about 20 people that changes every so often.
Yeah.
And what they do is they take turns doing certain paragraphs. And so what I'm doing is I'm taking dictation, but I'm also talking to them about it. So it takes a few hours because I'm also not a great typist. I'm a hunt and pecker. I'm a one-finger typist.
Yeah. Well, I think you learn with time. I started off as a two-finger typist, and I must admit I'm not bad with both hands. I mean, I make a lot of mistakes, but I'm pretty quick at getting through them now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think it comes with practice anyway. So on the Tuesday that you take the message, what time is it you sit? Do you get up and do it as perhaps as I do, first thing in the morning?
Usually it's early in the morning. It's usually after I have breakfast. We have a time set up, and I do it. And usually I do it on a Saturday, and then I have somebody, my friend Eugenie, who's in New England, who also happens to be of English extraction, who edits it for me, and then we put it up on Tuesday morning.
Yeah. So you can literally then, clearly in view of what you said earlier,
mm-hmm.
you can take messages or have conversations any time you like.
Exactly, Mike.
Yes. Do they direct your life in any way as to where you should go and what you would do? For example, do they tell you which meetings or conferences to attend?
Mostly no. What I do when I get a conference thing that I'm going to do, or wherever it is and whatever it's about, we talk about it and set it up, and then we go from there. When I'm actually doing the lectures, setting them up, I like to do bullets. They tell me what to put down, and so I've gotten to the point where it's a mutual creative process where I ask them what I want to do, and I tell them whether I think it'll work or not, and they tell me yes or no on that. And so it's interesting to actually have a creative process with people from other worlds. It's very unique. It's something
I'm not probing here or expecting you to give away any secrets, but privately, do they give you more information than what you give out through your messages?
Oh, yes. They give me a lot of stuff that I'm not supposed to tell people because I'm very curious.
Well, we'd all love to know, wouldn't we, really?
Right, yeah. That's why a lot of the updates are so vague, because they tell me that the information has to stay at a certain level to protect the people that are actually doing the work out there. So my process is, therefore, to do exactly what they say. And so sometimes people complain about it being a little too obtuse as far as who's doing what, but I have to keep that level because it's part of security. So.
Yeah, I can fully understand that. Just moving on to a slightly different subject now. Prior to the millennium, there's many people probably listening who took part in the anticipated 3 days of darkness, expecting there to be a change through the presence of the photon energy. Now, that never transpired, and I think a number of people felt actually let down, although it is my opinion, and you will correct me if I'm right here, that reading subsequent messages, they seem to indicate that there was a change of plan at the last minute, because they wanted to allow more people on Earth to raise their consciousness and go forward to ascension. Now, how correct am I in my assumption there?
You're pretty spot on there, Mike. So,
yeah.
basically, what they did was they allowed certain celestial things to happen. One of which was, I think, it was their backup plan all along. You know, and in 1994, they had the comets that hit Jupiter, and the Levy-Schumacher ones. And what happened was that was a backup, really, because it changed the energies of the outer planets of this particular solar system. So in the actual system that came in, which was a remnant of NOVA 1987A, came in, it was supposed to produce everything we're talking about, but instead it prevented that particular energies from coming in. It kind of neutralized them, because everything was set up to kind of back it up and not allow it to cause the photon belt to actually come in here. And so the result was that in the beginning of 1997, that all changed. That was all in the beginning of 97, and there are a lot of really strange things in the atmosphere that, in both the northern and southern hemispheres that I was able to later see. I had a lot of people in Australia write to me about it around that time about some of the strange phenomena, the same thing people in Alaska.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
So from that, I was able to see that what they were talking about was absolutely correct. Plus, I had some scientists down in Argentina that were involved in the project of monitoring coming into the photon belt who told me about what had happened. So.
Right. It's correct to say, isn't it, that we still are in the within the photon belt, which is passing through the solar system. So have you any indication as to what part that will have in the actual time of ascension?
Well, what's happening right now is we're sitting in this little pocket that was created by what I was just talking about. And we're slowly slipping out of that. And I guess at the right moment, whatever period that is, whether the next few years, next few months, whatever, it's going to actually slip out, and then this will lead to the ascension process, as well as the before that, the coming of the ships, the mass landing. So, the exact times and dates, there's something they don't talk to me about anymore, except to say the word that I've been at a few seminars. They kind of made fun of it, which is some say it's soon.
Yeah, right. I think most people understand now that they have to be patient. We all love to know dates, and we love to think that they can be relied upon. But things are in such a state of flux that I think we're realizing now that you just can't do that with any real confidence. You have to allow, don't you, for continual change.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And so...
Now, carry on, sorry.
Go ahead, Mike, go ahead.
I was simply going to move on, if you finish with your comments on
that particular thing. Go ahead.
To mention that you'll recall that when I emailed you, I mentioned something which brings us right up to date here. I get emails, and I'm sure you get far more, sort of rather complaining in a manner of speaking, that with all the things going on Earth, thinking of the conditions that are worsening, you can think of, obviously, the latest floods in Bangladesh, where I understand over 2,000 people were killed, and millions, of course, have been left homeless. And in more recent times, you've had other tragedies upon the earth. You've got these wars of genocide and other wars, such as the one in Iraq. Now, some people feel that this would warrant the Galactic Federation coming in and giving us some help. How do you see that?
Well, what the Federation has said is there's going to be some degrees of calamities like we see here, but what they are doing is keeping it from getting into actual nuclear exchanges.
Yes.
Or anything that would cause a really massive catastrophe. And those things they are keeping from happening. And so what they see is that unless something really disastrous happens on this planet, they're just on their time schedule that has been divinely set up for them, and they're going to follow it. And whatever the magical times are is when they show up is when it happens. So that's all I can say about that.
Yes, I see. I think a lot of our listeners will understand that in these type of events, such as the flooding, akin to, say, the severity of the tsunami, but a lot of the souls that pass over through those tragedies are actually quite aware in their life contract that this is part of their experience. And in actual fact, by being transported from those areas, they're actually released from the suffering and probably the poverty.
Exactly, exactly. I would agree with you 110%.
Yes. So their situations, if you understand it, are not possibly, it's a funny way to look at it, that they're possibly not quite as bad in the long run as one might think. Now, you were talking of the Galactic Federation obviously holding back on dates, but again, I know you couldn't give it even if you know, but are you nevertheless aware of the final date beyond which the Galactic Federation will definitely come to Earth, you know, when it reaches that point when they say, right, we've gone far enough, this is it?
Well, they've given me parameters, but I can't really talk about those things.
No, I know you can't, but I just wondered whether you are on a personal basis aware of when that will be, and I wouldn't probe you on it if you said yes. No, okay, so you can't really say...
No, I can't really... This, I can only say what people kind of say, really, going to say that again? Yeah, I am going to say it's very close and it's soon.
Yes.
That's all I can say.
Well, I'm pleased to hear that. I mean, logically, I think if we look ahead at where we are compared to the end of the cycle in 2012, there's really so little time left, and it makes you realize that all of these changes are going to take place. Logically, if logic applies in these sort of things, we can't really wait too long anyway, can we?
No, we're definitely, you know, the procedure is such that our society, especially this one here in America and a lot of other spots on the planet, are reaching points where it's just getting so bad that there has to be something outside that can cause the present reality to shift in a much faster way than it is right now. So,
yes.
So I would have to say that it can't be that much farther off. That just from my own logic that I would have looked at it, I would have to say that.
Well, that's my impression. Obviously, I read your messages weekly. I've been reading them for many, many years. And clearly, you can't do that without starting to remember some of the information and parts of the plan, etc. Now, the emphasis on the changes seems to revolve around the removal of the government in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And on a number of times, your messages have mentioned that they would be removed by legal means. Now, presumably, the first move has got to be that of getting rid of Bush and his administration. Now, I think people see many ways in which that could be achieved. But have you any idea as to what course it may take? I mean, are you privy to any idea?
Well, what I can say about that is that there are people within the present American government who are not in the highest positions, in other words, the appointed positions of the cabinet, etc., who are working very diligently to provide with other organizations around this planet legal means for getting rid of this present government and replacing it with a legal caretaker government whose job would basically be to institute a whole bunch of very important procedures that are part of the international plan that the what I like to call our Earth allies are setting up, you know, debt forgiveness, etc. And this whole process is very close to happening. So once again, I can't really say anything because when it comes to this, they are really mum about it. They're like somebody on the inside with the Manhattan Project, and they do the thing like intelligence guys said. I can either confirm or deny it, but I'll just tell you this. That's all they tell me.
I know what you mean, yes. But I mean, just reflecting on that, it seems to me there are many, many moves towards impeaching Bush and Cheney. So, I mean, that in itself, presumably, could lead to their legal removal. And, of course, there are other crimes that they have committed, which could lead them down the same path. So one suspects that they're not short of opportunities to get their hands on these people.
Right, they will.
Have you ever been contacted by any people in the House who have, say, got some support for the Galactic Federation?
Well, I've had people who have told me about such people, but I have never talked to them directly. There's a very, very secretive reality that is existing in Congress, which is that all the major things about what's going on, every congressman has been sworn to basically say nothing, non-disclosure statements, and they've had to sign all kinds of things like that. And so I hear about it only indirectly from people who are friends of theirs who have called me. And that's about all that I know about it. But I know that definitely I've had confirmations from a number of people who are former major intelligence people or are intelligence people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, who have said through friends of theirs that have been authorized to talk to me that such things are actually happening. Basically, what is happening is the actual legal shift of this government is not going to be done through the American political system. It's going to be done from people close to the top of that system, but not actually a part of it. Most of the part of this political system has been pretty well bought and sold by international corporations and other interest groups who have pretty well taken over how these people are elected. So most of those people are not a part of this process we're talking about. It's people just below that, kind of like senior members of civil service and other people in the military, et cetera, who understand the process of what needs to get done and are secretly doing it. And it's pretty well dispersed through all different parts of the government as far as that goes, and also in legal parts of the court that have not given in to the whole process of this buying off of interest that is how this government operates. The result is that these groups have come together and they're very close to actually doing something that will allow for a governmental shift to happen at the appropriate time.
That's great. That's good to hear. I must say, over a period of time, I rather thought at one time that there was a group of generals that were getting together who might have gone down that path. But I guess if they have a plan to do that, they're not going to tell too many people.
No, it has to be absolutely secretive, because when you're in those positions of power, the amount of scrutiny you have to go under all the time requires that you really know how to operate in a way that's almost like a super, spy operative. You have to really know how to do it and how to do it in a way that doesn't allow other people to know that you're doing it. So.
Now, it's something that you are probably in the best position to answer. When the Bush administration are legally removed, would you happen to know whether it is the intention that they stand trial on Earth for their crimes, or would they be taken away, even, say, off the planet?
Well, the initial aspect is to kind of do what you might call like a super Nuremberg thing, because there'll be a lot of people in different countries. This is not just a one-shot deal as far as the American government. There's a lot of other governments also that they're going to places of power or were in positions of power that will be arrested and put in the position where they have to stand trial in this, like I like to call, super Nuremberg operation.
Because in my mind, I thought it would be possible that they might actually be removed from the Earth and all this could take place somewhere else. I guess that may happen eventually, but I think what you said is the more likely process. Now, something that's come up from time to time in your messages that I think many people are interested in is your references to the inner Earth. Now, I gather, and you can again correct me if I'm wrong on this, because I've got this information, as it, you might say, secondhand, that you have said that everybody will move to the inner Earth.
Right. All the people who are going to be staying on Earth and in the solar system as guardians, as fully conscious physical angels, as I like to call them, are going to go to inner Earth. And those whose basic mission on this planet has been completed, because we're now approaching our return to full consciousness, will be going to the ships and returning to their homeworlds. That's a very small percentage. Most of us are going to be going into inner Earth to change. And as a matter of fact, I'm in the process of finishing up a video that will be coming out on inner Earth, hopefully before the end of this month, so that'll talk about all that stuff.
I'm certainly going to ask you before the program ended whether you would like to promote any new books or whatever that you had, but maybe we can come back to that again anyway.
Sure.
Right, well, do you feel that when that action happens, when we reach that point where people are, or the majority are going to be perhaps taken into the inner Earth, would there prior to that have been a period when there would actually be people who didn't want to go forward with ascension and then would be going forward to another level, to another Earth, as has been predicted?
Well, from all I've heard, everybody's in this together, so we'll all be going at that moment into inner Earth if that's what we're supposed to do for this particular life mission of ours, you know, on this particular life cycle. If not, like I just said, those people who are, when they become fully conscious, are supposed to return to their home worlds will do so.
Right, yeah.
And that would be only like maybe 10 or 20% of the population. The majority are going to stay here.
Yeah. So there is still, then I take it, a possibility that some people who might consider themselves not ready or still want to experience in the third dimension level, that may leave the Earth and actually go in a different direction.
Well, basically, from all that I've heard, everyone here has a life mission, except, as I said, if you are meant to go back to your home world. So even though you may be a very evil person on this planet or may not seem like a very nice person, in reality, you're something else. Everybody on this planet has agreed as far as this aspect of limited consciousness and their life mission before they become fully conscious to play certain roles. And so everybody's playing these roles from the Illuminati or Illuminoids, however you want to call them, on the way, all the way down to us. So whatever that particular role you played, now the final role everybody plays is an entirely different one. It's what we're all here for, which is to eventually become physical angels or fully conscious galactic beings, however you want to call it, and to fulfill the stewardship of helping to create this brand new solar system, galactic star nation, whatever name we come up with that we're supposed to call it.
Yeah. All right, that's good to hear. Over a period of time, how much information have you, if any, that is, about ETs and their bases on the moon?
Well, what has happened there is, of course, originally from, you might say, the very beginning, the moon was an artificial satellite. It was kind of a defense planet for what some people call Maldek, I've been told to call Bellona, who was the Roman goddess of war, the companion of Mars, and they said that's really more accurate for the world. But the moon, of course, came here when Lemuria was destroyed by the Atlanteans, and the moon, of course, is hollow because it is an artificial battle moon, so to speak, and there have been bases on it ever since that time. And so as far as ET bases on the moon are, they've been there for a long, long time, and they're still there. Right now, they're Galactic Federation bases. And for a long time, in the 50s through the 90s, there were various parts of those. They had separate bases that were allowed certain groups, like the Russians, the English, the Canadians, the Americans, and a few other groups that had craft that had been either back-engineered or that they had obtained. Like, for instance, the Germans had a lot of equipment that the Russians and the Americans got their hands on. And as a result of that, there's been bases on the moon. There were bases on the moon for almost 50 years. So, so we had that for a long, long time. And that's, of course, what the Apollo 11 astronauts discovered when they stepped off their LEM on the moon. They saw there were a lot of spacecraft up there, and a lot of them had... you might say emblems on them that show they were members of either the Russian or the American or British Air Force.
That would have been a surprise.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, when they came back, they started talking with one another about it, and they said not too many kind words about how they were just a PR project.
Dear me. Well, that's interesting. I haven't heard that story before. No, I like that one. Now, would it be true to say that for thousands and thousands of years, ETs have used the moon as their base, and the areas you're talking about, apart from where the Apollo 11 landed, would that be mainly on the side that we don't normally see, that's away from our view?
Right. The dark side of the moon has a slightly different topography, and that allows for more openings, and that's basically where the basic surface bases as well as the main entrances into the interior were,
Right. Have you ever been in a ship with them around the moon?
Right. I've been out in space all over the place, including back to the Cirrus.
Yeah.
And it's pretty incredible that how they zip around the universe.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah, it takes only about less than 7 minutes to get from here to Cirrus, the way they travel, so...
Wonderful, isn't it?
It is.
I love the idea of that. You can travel virtually instantaneously. So it's a wonderful concept.
Mm-hmm, it is.
Okay. Now, I was sent a few notes, I think that's all they are, from things you said at a very recent conference. So I've read through them, and I thought, well, I'll ask you one or two things about them, because some of it is, I believe, new information that hasn't appeared in your earlier messages. Now, I work out that what you've apparently said, putting a couple of comments together, is that it would be about 1 year after we have a change of government that people may then already start transferring to the ships. And if I may tell you how I've arrived at that, in case it's not immediately apparent, I think you've said that contract will happen 6 to 8 months after the changes in the government.
Right.
And that 20% of the people, I believe this is correct to term it, ascending, will go to the ships and experience the same metamorphosis as those going to the inner Earth. Now, you gave a time scale for that of about 4 to 6 months. But you can see what I've done. I've sort of added up the longer period and sort of settled for about 1 year. So would that be a correct conclusion, 1 year after the change of government, that they may be starting to transfer to the ships, etc.?
Right, yeah. It's not going to be very long between the time the transfer in government happens to the final aspects of the ascension process beginning.
All right, that's very quick, isn't it?
Right, that's why they expect us to do a lot of things very quickly, because we have technology that's been long suppressed on this particular planet, that if we didn't suppress it, we would not have the problems we're having right now with pollution, and also we would not have the problems we're having right now with oil, because oil would be just some minor little lubricant all over again if we totally had allowed these various technologies to come in at the time that the inventors who created them wanted them to come in, which would roughly have been the first quarter of the 20th century.
Right, yeah. Yes, we're way behind, aren't we, in our evolution in that sense?
Right, we are, because unfortunately the Illuminati decided and got the help from their mentors, the Anunnaki, to allow this oil age to continue way past the time frame when it was supposed to have basically transferred or evolved into the next stages of our technology.
Yeah.
And right. that's why we got things like the electronic age, and yet we're still using gasoline for the basic aspect of how we propel our motor cars around. So.
Yeah. Okay. Just coming back to the inner Earth, I gather at this conference you were talking of an experience you had where you went into the inner Earth and in 5 minutes, with a device that attuned to your brain waves, you covered every inch of a city about 40 by 40 miles. And I wondered if you could give us any of your experiences. I mean, what did the buildings look like? I'd love to know what the inner cities look like.
Well, the outside of the inner cities look like giant clusters of quartz crystals, basically. The giant difference, of course, is that they're multicolored and that they're living crystals, in that as you wish it to change, so it does. So the crystals may slightly change form in terms of their shape or their size. They get bigger, smaller, and the city increases or decreases as the inhabitants wish to expand or contract how they're putting their living quarters and every other part of the city together. And it's a individual as well as a collective decision. And the other thing that you will notice about the cities is that they're very, very beautiful, not just the amazing opalescent color changing that you see as you approach them. It's also, as you walk around in the cities, you notice there's lots of gardens of all different kinds and types, from tropical to temperate types of things, from tropical trees to various kind of, in other words, from conifers and palms to maples and elms, etc., as well as aligned all together in gardens, so they form these wonderful, almost like wall-like structures. And then in the hearts of a lot of these cities are these control centers, and what you have is these huge, amazing gardens that come together, and also these wonderful holographic theaters, which allow you to do whatever you want to do. It's kind of like Star Trek Plus. If you ever saw Next Generation, they talked about the holographic theaters there.
Yes.
And they talked about all the things you could do in them. They've reached a technology that's really far beyond what even Roddenberry allowed for the people to put in. And so not only can you be in one place, but you can actually just walk a few feet in as you, or drive a few feet or whatever, and you'll actually be passing for miles through some place that you wanted to go. So it'll feel like you're on a trip somewhere. And so they have this ability. If they want to change their houses, they can change their houses, shapes, size, what the room looks like, the furniture in it, because they have these really, really advanced units that allow them to bring any kind of thing into their houses that they want. So let's say they want to make their table bigger for their dining.
Yeah.
Let's say they've decided to have a party and they're paying some extra people that normally wouldn't fit. They can go and just enlarge it and change the shape of it and make it bigger. They can make their living room bigger or their dining room bigger. And so they have a lifestyle that's a lot different than what we're used to here, because to them the concept of the limits doesn't exist. So if you want to change all your furniture every day, you could do it.
Yes.
So you realize that you have people who don't understand about limits and the concept of you can do only this, you can't do that, or you can't go here, you can't go there. Mm-hmm. To them, everything is available, any kinds of foods, any kind of concept of a trip where you want to go. And so they do that all the time inside the cities, and they also occasionally go outside the cities, which are gorgeous. The ecological areas around each one of these cities is amazing, whether it's the cavern world cities, which are inside these huge caverns that exist between the Earth's surface and the inner surface of the planet, and also the outer, the inner surface world, because really if you look at the surface of the Earth is hollow. The surface that we see here on our planet as the outer world, as I like to call it, as also they do, is it just continues. It goes around the lip, which is the north and south poles, and continues directly on the inside of the planet. And because there's a shift in the gravity about halfway down, they would be considered walking on the surface of the world just as we would, just walking in the opposite way on the surface.
Mm.
So once you understand how the Earth is really put together, how the gravity really operates, etc., you start seeing a world that's a lot different from what geology and science has limited our thought into what it really is. And there's enough information from enough major people and scientists to prove that a lot of things that people are told is not really real. There is indeed a hollow Earth, and there is indeed an amazing central sun that, while not as bright as the sun that we see in our sky every day, is still pretty bright and a little more diffuse in its light, but it's still able to light up the inner world. And, of course, the inner world, unlike here, which we have a 24-hour cycle of, depending on the time of year, of certain amount of sunlight, certain amount of darkness, what they have is 24/7 light all the time. So the crystal cities have no windows or doors unless they want to create them. Once again, all these things are living. It's actually a living crystal, so it can change its size and shape. And if you want to put windows on it, it can. But it's done that way so that the people who live in the cities are totally create their environment. And so when they need to go for their short period of, which is not really sleep, it's kind of like reconstituting themselves about an hour a day, they just turn off the light, so to speak, and go into a deep trance and wake up. And when they wake up, they turn the lights back on, so to speak. So.
Right. When you're visiting these areas, do they also include such things as temples or healing centers? Do they need them?
Most of the healing centers and temples are near the bottoms of the cities. This is the area I didn't really cover in the tape, but what it really is they have these nodes which exist on our planet. Our planet is actually a 12-faceted crystal with 12 minor nodes, 144 major facets. And on each of these major and minor facet nodes is where these temples are on the inside of the planet. And just about all the major cities, crystal cities on the inside of the planet or in the crystal worlds, is located on these one of these nodes, and so their job is to take a spot which is in the city, and they dedicate that, and that's like a temple, and they can make it bigger or smaller as they wish.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, in Shambhala, they have a little governing center near the top of one of the major crystal centers, and they can turn that into a temple whenever they want to for ceremony.
Right. I mean, would it in fact be the case that because they are so advanced and more in perfection, that they don't actually need healing centers?
Exactly, yeah. They have a natural sense of the planet and are constantly in the equivalent of like a meditative mode anyways to help get together whenever it's required for the planet to get the energy that it needs to get its modes and nodes empowered so that it's able to maintain and sustain its life force.
Right. Now, I'm sure it must have cropped up in your messages. If not, I've certainly read it elsewhere. It's been said that at a certain time, the people from the inner Earth will actually come up to the surface. What would you know about that?
Well, what they've been doing from time to time, of course, is actually having missions where they, because most of them look like us, what they have been doing is just coming up here from time to time and just doing whole sessions where they stay for decades and actually pick up information. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I was told was that you never know if a person you're passing on the street is from inner Earth or whether they're just another fellow person from the surface world. So they've been here for a long, long time. So when they come up and actually reveal themselves, it's not going to really be all that startling, because actually when they go to their full height, they're only a little bit taller than we are. But they can they can move themselves down because they can shapeshift because they're fully conscious beings, and they can look just like us. They can even mimic our how we talk and et cetera and our languages, so nobody would know who they are.
The question that often interests me is regarding Admiral Byrd. And according to his diaries, he did visit the inner Earth. Now, personally, I believe that, but would you happen to know through your contacts whether, in fact, Admiral Byrd's account was true?
Yeah, it's true. What they've told me, he did that. It was kind of scary for him the first time. The second time, he kind of expected it.
Yeah.
So he became very, very interested in the whole concept of inner Earth. That's one of the reasons why he was a big proponent of for his second trip, which was the south, was through the South Pole in what was called the International Geophysical Year of the late 50s, 57, 58. He was a big proponent to create IGY in the 50s, because that's one of the things that he really wanted to do, was to be given an opportunity to actually lead large groups of people into inner Earth in expeditions, and that's, of course, what happened.
Oh, right. Well, I'm pleased to hear that, because, well, it goes without saying that a lot of these things are tried to be covered up, or they're disputed, or they're given out incorrectly. And I did have a really strong feeling that Admiral Byrd's report was correct. When you spoke, again, I'm going back to these notes that somebody passed me from your conference, that the Earth will be covered by two mantles made of ice. I seem to recall reading somewhere that, in fact, that's how the Earth was perhaps millions of years ago.
Right.
Do you know, in fact, if that is the reason why it will be covered by two mantles made of ice to restore it to what it was?
Well, right now, ice is kind of a cause of the cold, and what is going to originally, the original Earth was very warm and had the firmament around it, so it really didn't have, except for the ice particles that made up the firmament, it really didn't have any ice on it. It was pretty much subtropical, with temperatures being in the 70s, with the lows being in the high 60s as far as Fahrenheit goes.
Right. So that is slightly inaccurate to say two mantles made of ice. It's actually ice particles, that's what you're saying, yeah?
Right.
Okay, that's fine. I believe at times there have been reports of flying ships coming out of the entrance to the inner Earth. So there's one assumed from that they are perhaps often seen in our skies. I mean, they obviously have that technology.
Right. Most of the inner-Earth ships come up through portals that are deep within the oceans of this planet, and a few of them come up through some hidden mountain valleys, and in certain places have been able to, we're fortunate people were in the right place to actually get pictures of the ships coming up. I have a picture that I was using in that lecture referring to, which was taken by some people down in South America who happened to be in the right spot at the right time and saw the ship come up and took pictures of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Can you tell me what type of craft they are?
Well, most
are they
of
round,
the...
Are they round, triangular, or...?
Most of the Garthan ships look like large bells.
Bells? Oh, they're that type. Right. Well,
yeah.
There have been, over a period of time, reports of these bell-like crafts. So we might well assume then that they have come from the inner Earth.
Exactly, exactly, Mike.
Yeah. That seems a strange design, really, doesn't it? Because one gets the impression that the most practical and most common seen type of craft are the discs.
Right. Yeah, there
what
are,
type of craft are the Syrians use?
Most of the Syrian ships are shaped like large globes. There's one ship that's about 100 feet across, and there's a larger one that's about 300.
Right. I mean, some of the sizes you read about where the mother ships are concerned are truly staggering. I think I've sort of read of one that was hundreds of miles long, and it rather defies one's imagination. But what is your take on mother ships?
Well, exactly. That's exactly what most of the Syrian ships are. The one that I met washed on when I was a kid was a very small mothership. It was not that long. It was only a few miles long. The one that I eventually got to see him on later in the 80s and 90s was a much, much, much bigger ship. It was huge.
Yeah. Have you been on board one?
Yep.
You have?
I lived in those ships when I was a kid, and I've had a few times when I first started out again in the 80s and 90s when I went up to the ships. I haven't really been in a ship physically since the early 90s.
Right, yeah. I gather that if we people from Earth were to be transported into one, we might not actually realize we were on a ship at all.
No, because one thing is, we're used to, if we're on a aircraft of any sort, that we would feel an inert motion from the fact that the ship is bouncing in the air.
Yes.
In the case of these ships, they have no motion of any sort that you can detect. It feels just like you're on Earth. You're in some big house on Earth. And,
yes,
of course, the difference is that when you walk, because the surface of the ships, the flooring, is set up to perfectly support your weight, it feels almost like you're walking on air, because you don't have this give that you have when you're walking on a regular, let's say, wooden floor.
Right, yeah.
So that's the next thing you might feel. It'll feel almost like you're in some kind of a dream because of that.
Well, I gather, and obviously in view of their technological skills, that they can replicate any type of conditions or atmospheres within those ships.
Exactly. So they could put you in one of these advanced holographic theaters on their ship, and as far as you know, you would be someplace on Earth or wherever they want you to feel that you're at.
could be a rather odd experience to think you are still on Earth and find that you're on a ship.
Exactly.
Now, Sheldon, it's been a terrifically enjoyable time speaking to you, and I don't know where the time's gone. I've got about 3 minutes left before I have to close the program. So would you like to promote any of your books or whatever, or your website? And perhaps you could tell us briefly what's going to be in this new video that you're doing.
Well, I have a video coming out on Inner Earth, and it should be out in the next week or two. And we're going to talk about the crystal cities, what Inner Earth is like.
Oh, lovely.
And we're going to, we'll have illustrations about how these various cities look. And we're going to talk about how they live, et cetera, kind of the stuff we've been alluding to, but in greater detail. And that should, like I said, should be out in a few weeks. And then we have two other tapes that people might want to get from us, which are about the different things about the landings and first contact, which are called Mission Possible and Landings 101. And if anybody wants to do that, get to us, they can do a number of things. First of all, they can go to our website, which is www.paoweb, that's P-A-O-W-E-B, one whole word, .com, and look up one of the products, and they can and order it there on our website. We have a shopping cart. And then the other thing they can do, if they want to get in contact with us, we have a voicemail, which is at 808-573-3110.
Yeah.
And then to email us at info, that's I-N-F-O, at paoweb.com. And finally, if you want to write to us, our address here is 204 East 2nd Avenue, number 408, and that's in San Mateo, California, 94401.
That's great, yes. Well, I'm certainly going to be one of those who will be looking forward to getting a copy of your video. That sounds very interesting, very exciting.
Thank you.
Well, my time is almost up. It's really great of you to have accepted an offer to come onto the show. It's been a very interesting time. Thank you for coming, and I look forward to seeing your regular weekly messages, and I'm sure our listeners do. Thank you very much, Sheldon, for being with us.
Thank you very much, and I enjoyed the hour, and maybe we can do this again sometime soon.
Yes, I would certainly put you on my list for a future interview. Yes, thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Right, and salamat.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Well, my dear friends, we have come to the end of the program. I thought it was extremely interesting, and I'm sure you did as well. But thank you for being with me. Next week, I'm doing an interview with Nancy Tate from my own site, Tree of the Golden Light. And I expect many people will know the name because Nancy also does channeling. So hope to be with you, or you be with me, next week. God bless you all. Thank you.
To the north, now to the south.